Ruth chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of your husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go your way. For I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi, when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Well, thank you for your welcome, and it's good to be here again today. Now, the last time I was invited to preach on Ruth here in this church, they wanted me, well, they demanded that I cover the whole book in one session. Fortunately, things are expanding these days. Mind you, I still think 4 Sundays would be better. But anyway, leave it to that. Looking at the book of Ruth, in the days when the judges ruled. Now, what sort of days were they? They were days when people did whatever they liked. We read in the book of Judges, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." One commentator pointed out that spiritually speaking, we live today in the book of Judges. There's no king in Israel, and there will not be until Jesus returns. But like Israel in the past, many of God's people are living in unbelief and disobedience and not enjoying the blessing of God. They were days of weak faith, irresponsible conduct. Judges deals with the faithlessness of Israel and its leadership, contrasted with Ruth, a picture of faithfulness among common folks, ordinary people, even a Moabite woman. Days of famine in the land. God was acting in judgment on his sinning people. And so Elimelech and his family left. We read, a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Was this a wrong move? Well, think about it. What was Moab like? Moab was a nation that had been conceived in incest. We read about it in Genesis 19, after Lot had been rescued from Sodom, and he and his two daughters were hiding in a cave, and they seduced their father, and that was the origin of the people of Moab. Moabites were banned forever from the congregation of God's people because of their treatment of Israel during the time of the Exodus. We read in Deuteronomy 23, no Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the tenth generation. None of them may enter the assembly of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor in Mesopotamia to curse you. But Bethlehem, and the word means the house of bread, was not living up to its name. There was famine. So Elimelech, whose name means my God is king, decided not to live up to his name and took his family off to Moab. They were a noble family. Verse 2 tells us they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah who went into the country of Moab and remained there. Ephrath was an early name of Bethlehem, and it probably reflects that they belonged to an aristocratic family of Ephrah or Bethlehem from whom Elimelech had been descended. But we have to face this. The way down to Moab was a way out from God. But you see, it was a time when everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And Elimelech and his family followed the pattern. We can argue with it. You see, God gives us freedom of choice. People can ignore his will. People can argue with it. We can disobey it. We can even fight against it. But in the end, the will of God will prevail. Psalm 33. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart to all generations. Daniel 4. He does according to his will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And with time, whatever misgivings Elimelech and Naomi may have had began to disperse. And it seems that they were now taking root in the foreign soil of Moab. God had other plans for this family, but they didn't know it yet. So they sojourned in the country of Moab. And then Naomi's husband died. Verse 3, Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. And both of the sons married Canaanite women. Now, this wasn't exactly forbidden in the law of Moses, like, say, marriage to a Canaanite woman would have been. But what did it represent? Because you see, both of these sons had Canaanite names, and they weren't very complimentary ones at that. Some scholars tell us that Mahlon meant sickly, and Chilion meant pining, you know, groaning. unhappy. So, did their names reflect the sort of men that they were? And I noticed that Leo Morris in his Tyndall Old Testament commentary suggests the names suggested that back in the day when they were born in Bethlehem, pagan influence was still at work in their parents. Well, whatever. The two sons married. Had they forgotten the story of Baal Peor in Numbers 25, where Moabite women seduced Israelite men and drew them to worshipping a pagan god? But we know what happened. It tells us in verses 4 and 5, they lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So Elimelech dies first, then Mahlon and Chilion. They lived up to their names and they died. And it looks like they were too sickly or too miserable or whatever even to have produced an heir before they died. And we need to understand what this meant for these three women. Naomi and Orpah and Ruth. And I'm quoting here from a commentary. The hazards of widowhood in antiquity were great. In most rural areas, women would have had little opportunity to pursue independent careers and therefore overwhelmingly depended upon their husbands for sustenance. And upon her husband's death, a widow normally relied on her sons for support. But all of those men were gone. And here were the three widows left. Again, quoting from a commentary, if the marriages in the narrative followed typical ancient Near Eastern tradition, Naomi probably married in her mid-teens and had likely borne her two sons by the age of 20. The sons would have married a little earlier than age 20 to young women also in their mid-teens, so that by the time she decides to return to Judah, Naomi's likely to be in her mid-40s, and Ruth and Orpah are likely in their mid to late 20s. And there's those three women. And so a chastened Naomi decides to set out and go back to Jerusalem, verse 6. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. Notice the message. The Lord had visited, the Lord had come to the aid of his people. It wasn't Baal, the fertility god of Moab that was worshipped there, that brought the food. No, Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God of Israel, was blessing his people. So, Naomi's daughters-in-law accompany her. Now, she tries to dissuade them. Verse 8. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. And at first the two young women declined to return. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, no, we'll return with you to your people. But Naomi puts the facts before them. She could not produce other husbands for them. And furthermore, she felt that God was displeased with her. She says in verse 13, the hand of the Lord has gone out of against me. So she's telling the girls, you don't have to suffer with me. The Lord's against me, but you can cut your losses and you can go back. And then they made their final choices. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. This was true commitment. Naomi wasn't going to make it easy for Ruth to come to choose the people and the God of Israel. She says in verse 15, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But then comes the great statement of true commitment, one of the finest in the Bible, that Ruth made. But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." This was not a matter of emotion. This was a commitment of devotion. Emotion can change with changing circumstances. Devotion is the fruit of conviction. And Ruth chose. She chose Naomi over her family, her national identity, her religious idolatry. Naomi's home would be her home. Naomi's people would be her people. Naomi's God would be her God. Naomi's destiny would be her destiny until death parted them. And in all of this, Naomi's God would be her judge. "May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." There was nothing more for Naomi to protest. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. Yahweh, the Lord, the God of Israel, had been invoked. "May the Lord do so to me if I don't stand by my commitment." Ruth's conversion was complete. The events that follow show that her life matched her confession. And so they came home at last. Verse 19. So the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" It was an event that stunned the city. Here was a backslider coming home. Here was an outsider coming in. And the women asked, "Is this Naomi?" And look at what she answers. "Don't call me Naomi." That means pleasant. "Call me Mara." The word means bitter. "For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." And may I say, there's many a believer who's had an experience like this when they have strayed from faithfulness to the Lord. And then in the grace of God, they brought to repentance and recovery. And they could use Naomi's words, "I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." But the grace of God takes care of that. Naomi, look at what had happened to her. She'd exchanged one famine for three funerals. Because you see, trials can bring us a blessing. It was through trials that Ruth came to faith in the God of Israel. And trials can bring bitterness. At least for now, Naomi blamed the God of Israel. She seemed to feel he was bitter against her. Or was she bitter against him? But it all depends on what we do with trials, on what we let God do through them. But Naomi and Ruth were going to make a new start. Verse 22, Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. The beginning of the barley harvest. It was springtime, April or May in the northern hemisphere, the time of harvest. a time of celebration and praise in ancient Israel, a time of new life, a new beginning. Naomi was about to make a new beginning with God. With God, it's never too late to start over again. As the prophet Joel would later teach, God's promise to the repentant, I will restore to you the years that the swarming locusts have eaten. And so they came back to Bethlehem. And that sets the stage for the rest of what's going to happen in this book. And not to anticipate too much, the wonder of it is that this duo of women who returned, their lives are woven into the wonder of God's plans for the sending of his son. But you'll see that later on in the book of Ruth.